Hey there, have you heard the news about two ladies with some funny mental health views? They got a podcast, it's a real blast. Sharing stories that'll have you in stitches.
Hi, I'm Kelly.
And I'm Kimberly.
And welcome to the I'm Not Okay
K podcast.
So how are you doing today, Kimberly? On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being the worst and 10 being the best, as the scale usually goes.
As the scale does usually go, I'm very familiar. Having been to therapy for many years, I would say I'm a 4. I'm a strong 4.
Strong 4 today.
Yeah. You know what? Take away that strong. I'm weak. I'm a weak 4.
A weak 4. Oh, gosh. What does 4 mean to you?
It means not good. Below average. I don't know. 40% out of 100. What does that mean to you, Kelly?
No, that means math. So that means jack shit.
Okay. That's okay. That's fair. That's fair. Why? What are you on a scale of 1 to 10, Kelly?
Showered.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You're barely on the board.
I'm barely on the board, but I got a shower. So I did good today.
Yeah, you know what? That's a win. It is a large win.
Yeah, it's not even a small win, man. It's a large win, that's for sure.
Yeah, we got out of bed. Like, honestly, that should be at least 2 bonus points.
Oh my gosh, if the whole day was counted by points and at the end of the day we had points for all the things that we did against our depressions.
I'd convert it into cash money and I'd buy myself something to get free dopamine. It's not free. I literally paid for it.
It's not free if you paid for it. No, it's not. But that's like that. I like that exchange rate. I'm not mad at it.
Yeah, literally living our lives for money.
That's what everybody's trying to do.
Is your cat playing with the wire?
That's the goal. Oh, no, that's me.
Oh, okay. So you're just fidgeting while we talk. Are you already bored?
Yep, I'm already bored. I've just got to fidget. I gotta move,
I don't. I sit professionally still because I'm a...
Yeah.
But if we're talking about looks, I'm a 10 out of 10. You know what I'm saying?
Well, on this podcast, I'm Not Okay, Kay. Kimberly and I explore all sorts of mental health issues, mental wellness. Her and I are not certified professionals. So do not take help from us. Do not seek help from us. If you have a true issue, please reach out to a therapist. Or if something is incredibly crazy, dial 911. Do not dial us. We are here suffering with you, and we are also here to succeed with you. On our show today, we will be featuring a story told by Kimberly. The topic of the story is not known yet. She's going to be surprising us. And then after the story is told, we will be doing a book corner. Kimberly and I are currently reading the book How to Do the Work by Dr. Nicole LaPera. We will be reading a few chapters each week and discussing them with you towards the end of the podcast. So stay tuned the entire time to hear that. And maybe eventually you could start reading along with us, which would be a great goal. And we could all have a bunch of fun together discussing the book. Now, Kimberly, what do you think about all that? That's our podcast.
Seems like a lot of work to me, Kelly. I don't know why I signed up for this.
It's for all my mental imbalances brought me here to this day, to now.
Yeah. I'm not even getting paid for this. What is this? This is like therapy.
This is therapy. This is our therapy. This is our healthy hobby.
This is probably not good therapy, though.
I mean, it's a type of expression. Like dance.
This is our dance.
This is our dance. So would you like to get into our dance?
Yeah, I mean, we can, but let's lower the expectations a little. So lobotomy. Should we jump in? I'm very excited to talk to you about lobotomies.
Oh, you have lobotomies for me?
Lobotomies. You get a lobotomy. You get a lobotomy. You get a lobotomy.
I love lobotomies. Not that I've ever had one, but I think it's so creepy and so.
Yeah. So I did very rudimentary research.
Mm-hmm. As expected.
Obviously, just a nice little Google.
a nice little Google search.
I'm getting this information from a National Library of Medicine article. There was a Psych Central blog I looked at, but they had sources in their article, so it's like pretty legit. And then an NPR story. So that's kind of what we're working with. So there is some credibility to this. But Kelly, do you know what a lobotomy is?
I'm pretty sure. It's when they go through your eye to get to parts of your brain. And then there's a ice pick lobotomy, I think is like the most infamous one.
Yep. Do you know why they do it?
Because they lack the awareness of how to treat people with mental unwellness.
Mental unwellness.
New word created today here.
Yeah, that's basically it in a nutshell. So it's brain surgery meant to treat mental illness. A lot of what I read, it was actually really upsetting. And I feel like psychiatry has come such a long way, but like also has such a long way to go. They said it was like a more humane treatment rather than putting all these people in straitjackets or like in a padded cell because the psych hospitals were being overwhelmed and, you know, they wanted people back out in society and all this stuff. But I'm like, also the answer to that was literally splitting people's brains in half. There is no in between. Like, okay, cool, straitjacket or ice pick. But originally, before like the ice pick lobotomy, because that's what I knew. Like, I think did you see Nurse Ratched on Netflix?
No, I didn't see Nurse Ratched. Because like, I've heard that I should have then.
It's kind of dark, but like, I believe there's a scene where like they do a lobotomy and it's just like, oh gosh. So originally doctors would like drill into the skull. I saw pictures where like there's just like a square hole in this person's skull. I'm like, oh my gosh, the amount of pain that would be. I know the brain, I don't think has any like nerve endings or like you can't feel.
But really?
Yeah, I think that's a thing. I mean, don't quote me on that. There's no resource backing that besides Kimberly, but like just drilling into your brain, like that's gotta hurt. You have nerve endings on your head. I don't know. Anyway, so they drill through your skull and then inject ethanol to destroy certain like connections in the brain. So like just injecting stuff in your brain. And I'm just like, the amount of connections you have, like that's terrifying. Like,
isn't ethanol in my gas tank?
I think it's just, isn't it like alcohol type stuff? Yeah, like it's like not good. Like, I don't think it should go in your brain.
How did they come up with the science, man?
Kelly, how did they come up with any science? It's science, you know? Anyway, so that's where it started. And actually, this like has been going on for like, I think, a long while. Like back in history, they find skulls of, you know, whatever. Like this isn't, it's new in this day and age, but like, I think in history, this has been done before. So like you said, it was the ice pick lobotomy where it turned into the ice pick lobotomy where like you stick the ice pick, it's like in the person's eye and like, I think with like a chisel or like a hammer or something.
Yeah.
You just go into their brain and like you split certain connections. I think it has to do with like the prefrontal cortex and all this mumbo jumbo science, but basically like splitting connections in your brain. And over the years, roughly, I've seen the number change, like 50 to 60,000 lobotomies were performed in the US and Europe. In the like two decades that this was kind of popular, which is kind of insane.
Yeah.
But this kind of started with, did you take psychology in college at all?
Yes, sir. I got a bachelor's degree in psychology.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah.
I really do. So much more from you now.
That's fine. I have more to give.
Yeah, you do. I have a minor, and that minor was a struggle to get. So together we make one college degree almost.
Whoop, whoop.
So have you heard of Phineas Gage, the American crowbar case?
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, I have a feeling you'll remember this. So he was a construction worker on a railroad, and like there was an explosion or something, and a rod went through like his head, basically, in a cheek, out through the top of his head, and he survived.
Okay.
The funniest part reading about this guy, I mean, it's not funny, it's serious, but like he carried the bar around with him. Like until he died. Like he, that was like his friend or something. Like, I guess it is a good talking point.
Wait, so they got the bar out of his face?
Yeah. No, he's walking around with a 12 pound.
Well, that's what I'm thinking.
Yes, they got it out of his face.
Oh, shit.
One of his eyes didn't work. Like, there's certain things that, like, you know, he was still affected. But, yeah, just shot through and he kept the bar. I mean, I guess I would, too. I wouldn't carry it around with me. Anyway, so the bar was 3 feet, 7 inches in length and 1.25 inches in diameter. And this just shot through his head. Dear God. Okay. So they called this the frontal lobe syndrome. So there were mental and behavioral changes. So he used to be like energetic, you know, personable, hard worker, his friends said. And then he became obstinate, like irresponsible. And they call this the frontal lobe syndrome because like his frontal lobe got janked up with this pole. So ugh. Does this ring bells now?
Slightly. But when I hear Phineas, I always want to go Phineas and Ferb.
Okay.
You know that, right? You get that.
I get that reference. Completely okay. Wrong in this right. Context, though.
It
but
is,
yes,
it is. But no, I do remember this story back in college, like 70 years ago. I remember
70. You are pretty old, but yeah, he carried this iron with him everywhere, and I thought that was really strange.
It's like a mark of pride or something. It's like this thing tried to kill me, and I beat it. Like, let me show you the most deadliest weapon, but it's not deadly,
and it's heavy. Like, or I would think it's heavy.
Yeah. He was just walking around bench pressing his murder weapon.
Yeah.
The weapon that tried to murder him.
Yeah. Like what? I don't know. But anyway, so that's Phineas P. Gage. And that's kind of, it's not what started it, but it's like an important reference point in like psychology and the brain and lobotomy.
Yeah. Something they realized came, like stuff came out of that.
Yeah. So there's like so much background between America and then other places in the world doing lobotomies. The first psychosurgery was performed by, I'm going to butcher this, Dr. Gottlieb Burkhardt in Switzerland in 1888. So like years ago.
Dr. Gotti.
He removed part of the brain. He was like, oh, hey, this part of the brain is abnormal behavior. Let's remove it.
From a full-fledged human being.
Well, let me, yes, because there were some of these people who like did it on monkeys, which is always so sad to me. But yeah. Yes, I think this was on, yes, for his patient's abnormal behavior. So removing chunks of brain. Okay.
So nasty. Just so nasty.
I just think, thankfully, when I talk to my doctor about my mental illness and I'm like, I'm anxious, I'm depressed, they're not like frontal lobotomy. Like, I would just hate to be alive.
If I was in the past, I would have been a full-blown contestant for a frontal lobotomy.
And that's so sad. That's so bleak.
I know.
Actually, because you weren't necessarily in a mental institution, I'm not sure you'd be top of the list.
I think I probably would have wound up in a mental institution.
Okay, well, let's think positively.
Like, I just, the past would have been the dark ages for me if I was alive back then. I'm just super lucky that we're on this mental health kick right now with every, like, this, it's a wave. But even some countries, like, it's not like this for them.
Oh, no, not at all. And that's a whole other conversation because that is depressing.
Yeah, it's not fair.
Anyway, so he did this. He removed the chunks of brain. And Surprisingly, his report was not well received by his colleagues and mm-hmm. met with disapproval by the medical community. So he like stopped doing the work, which he still did it to a number of people. So those people's lives were affected forever. But he's like, OK, I'm going to stop. So then America started doing this. 1935, Dr. John F. Fulton. This is where the monkeys come in. Chimpanzees. Oh. Two chimpanzees had bilateral resections of the prefrontal cortex. I don't know what that means. They had brain stuff happening.
Yeah, more brain stuff.
Yeah. And it's so sad. The monkeys, like, yeah. Come on. Anyway, these, I guess, were like pioneering because these animals became devoid of emotional expression, which is so sad. And they were no longer capable of arousal of the frustrational behavior usually seen in these animals. So it like changed their emotional state. And that makes me so sad. So the behavioral change was noted, but the actual implications of this surgery weren't. So like later on, like down the line, social scientists noticed that aggressive behavior and rage reaction were associated with low tolerance for frustration in individuals with sociopathic tendencies. So like they just looked at like, oh, cool. This emotional whatever is gone in these monkeys. But like, what about other stuff that's happening? You know, like, are they still able to socialize or be quote unquote normal in their, you know, community, that kind of thing. So that wasn't really looked at when he like noted the changes. So, oh goodness, Kelly, buckle up. So frontal lobotomy, which is, I'm not a scientist, chunking up the brain. That's what I think basically
brain stuff.
Is.
Mm-hmm. We love it. Brain stuff. Yes.
Brain stuff. It says the severing of the underlying white matter, which have you ever heard that thing where we only use like 10% of our brain?
Yeah. Yeah. I have heard that. And it drives me crazy.
Yeah. Because it's so not true. Yeah. But I think that's because of like the white matter and whatever. But anyway, it reached its most popular during World War II.
Yeah.
So in the 1930s, the work of the celebrated Egas Moniz, M-O-N-I-Z. So Moniz. He is considered the father of cerebral angiography, whatever. I don't know. But he presented 20 patients, all this stuff of lobotomies. They called it lecotomies, L-E-U-C-O-T-O-M-Y.
I wonder if that's just like a weird spelling exchange from the German version.
Yeah, I have no idea.
If we were trying to make it our own in our own way. That's interesting.
Yeah. Most likely America likes to do that.
You know how America does. So it's ours now.
Yeah, seriously. Like let's just change two letters and now it's ours. Mm-hmm. But he did this like research, 20 patients, whatever. And then he won the Nobel Prize for his pioneering work on frontal lobotomy.
What about all these patients? My God.
Yeah. And once again, just the Nobel Prize.
Forever.
Are they just like, do people even know what these things are half the time?
No, not at all.
Specifically from the research, it says the white matter connections between the prefrontal cortex and the thalamus were sectioned to alleviate severe mental illness, including depression and schizophrenia in long-term hospitalized patients.
Oh, gosh. You would have been there.
What? I'm not long-term depression. Hospitalized.
Well, you would have been back then because you wouldn't have had any of these resources.
I guess. Or people would just think, like, I'm very lazy.
Just say
lazy.
You would have been with me. You would have been with me.
Okay, I'm trying to not put myself in the lobotomy category. Thank you very much.
Mom. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So Nobel Peace Prize. Does it say anything about what happened?
Okay, it's not the Peace Prize.
Oh, it's not the Peace Prize.
It's just like the Nobel Prize. You know how they have different ones?
Yeah.
The
I just always say Peace. Yeah, he's trying to make peace in the brain. No, that's not quite it. So this guy who won the Nobel Prize, what happened to all 22 of his patients?
20
experiments, I'd say. Yeah.
So I read one article where they tried to track some of these patients down because it was like, I don't know, like Idaho or something. They're like, oh, some of these people had lobotomies. Like, let's try and check in. This was obviously like decades and decades ago. This wasn't like yesterday. And it's insanely sad because so some people would just die from the treatment, which, okay, that makes sense. A nice pick going in your brain, like one wrong move and you like sever, you know, whatever. So the percentage, these aren't statistical, but like for generality purposes, like 20% would die just like from, you know, a smaller portion would just die from the surgery or they would commit suicide.
20% is a large number for such a small group, you know?
What, 20%?
Yeah, it's a large number.
Yes, it is. But there's like three options. So 20%, they would get worse or they would die. No, actually, I think it was they would die. Because then it's like 30, 40% would get worse.
Mm-hmm,
like
mm-hmm.
After they have this, you know, now they'd have less capacity to move, to do their own things. Like they would become even of greater need to people around them. So that's that chunk. And then the last chunk, and I think this is, I'm assuming this is why it's spread, is because it kind of worked. Like these people became different versions of themselves, but like not emotional. So yeah, they're not depressed, but I'm not sure how happy they are either. So technically, their depression, quote unquote, went away. So this, quote unquote, worked.
To me, it sounds like it worked for other people in their lives that were happy to not see the behavior anymore versus the person itself. It definitely didn't work for.
Yes. I mean, 100%.
That's what I would think.
I don't think many of these lobotomies, people were like, oh, I mean, maybe for some of them, because I'm thinking of family where like you don't know, but you want to help your family member. You're like, they're
suffering. I'm sure there were cases like that. I'm sure. Yeah.
So I could see that where they're like, oh, yay, they're not suffering anymore. But like, from what I read, a lot of these are like people in psych hospitals where they're like, we have no more room. And some of these people we want to release back into society. So they're like, lobotomy. And
lobotomy. Get back out there. Lobotomy. Yeah, really. You too.
Get off the bench. Get back in the game.
Lobotomy. Get out.
But it's crazy because they're like, oh yeah, we do like 6 an hour or like something, because they were just like, and also
that's disgusting. Six, like that's so careless. That's so careless.
These people would be like, I'm pretty sure awake many times. Like I think they said like local anesthesia.
This wasn't even that long ago either. This was just the 30s, you said?
30s to like, oh gosh, when did this end? To the 1960s? So 30 years.
That's not even 100 years ago.
Yeah.
Like that's like that was like just around the river bend.
Like that's crazy.
Yeah.
And get this, it's not even technically illegal in the US.
Like, wait, what?
I know. So other countries are like, yeah, this should be illegal, you know, whatever. In America, they're like, it's frowned upon, but like not illegal. they're rarely performed, but technically still legal. And I'm like, who is getting lobotomies? I feel like everybody has that reaction when you hear lobotomy. And it's like, for good reason. Like this is...
makes my stomach turn.
Anyway, so who was being treated? Like I said, according to this article, the most severely incapacitated patients were like psychotherapy was ineffective or unavailable. So it's like, oh, unavailable. Cool. There wasn't enough resources.
Mm-hmm. Let's put a pick in the brain.
Yeah. Yeah. They basically did it to those people. I've also seen, and I don't know how prevalent this was, but you know, where women, like their husbands would be like, oh, she is so mentally distressed. Like she needs help. Lobotomy.
I know.
Also, I saw gay men.
Yes.
Lobotomies.
Because they'd be sent to institutions because it'd be like something, you're sick, something's wrong with you. And then they'd send them and then, yep,
Exactly.
Same with the men being my wife is hysterical. Mm-hmm. I've heard exactly. These stories and it's before. Like, you're so right.
How can you talk yourself out of it? You can't. It's just not possible.
No.
Women had more lobotomies done than men, but gay men were also included in there. So that's kind of mixed in here with these other psych patients where it's like, okay, I wonder how easily accessible this was to the community. Was it just like, oh, my wife got a lobotomy and now she's, you know.
Yeah, like your neighbor next door is like, oh, yeah, Shelly's back. Oh, well, how is her trip? She's good. Like, look at, you know, Shelly's been, she's out of bed now. She's doing this, she's doing that. And it's like, you know, then the neighbor's like, oh, I could take my Shelly. Like, like if it was like that, like how he came home, he's a whole different person. Like just hearing that, like, oh, he's a whole different person now. He's changed so much. Like that could sound like a really good thing. But in reality, no, it was absolutely terrible, probably for the person living inside the brain that had the lobotomy. I would feel like that was probably, I mean, I've never had one, but I feel like you'd feel trapped inside because you can't express anything. It's all gone.
Yeah, that actually brings up a good point because I'm not sure how much research was actually done on the lobotomy patients in regard to like emotional trauma or emotional regulation, because like the Gage guy where he like would get upset and, you know, couldn't really regulate his emotions as well or his anger. And it's like, why didn't people talk to the actual patients besides seeing, oh, they don't, you know, they're not as emotional or they don't get depressed or whatever. It's like, okay, are you happy today? Can you still feel, you know, why aren't they actually talking to the patients? I feel like many times that happens in psychology where it's like, oh, this miracle thing. It's like, is it?
Well, the research was done, the accolades were given, and now you don't need to revisit it because you've got the data that you need to prove such and such is such and such, especially back then. I mean, yeah. I don't know anything like that today, but back then I'd say they got their rewards and walked away because just the amount of care for life back then was just different. It was just different. The amount of value we put on one's life, especially during wartime when everybody's trying to figure things out and trying to stay ahead of the competition.
Yeah.
Competition being Germany doing crazy experiments.
Yeah. That's a whole other very sad thing. But yeah, I think it was like, we have a problem. We need to solve it. Let's just put a Band-Aid. And like the lobotomy was the Band-Aid. Mm. And like try and get these people out of psych hospitals so they're not this like weight on society. When in reality, it's like, hey, maybe give them some good resources, like a good therapist. But actually, the reason that lobotomies began to end is because the drug pharmaceutical revolution began in the 1960s. Drugs that would help them began to become more popular. That kind of lessened the need when it's like, okay, so we have medicine that can do this and like it might actually help better. But I found this kind of interesting. So a high profile incident that helped turn public opinion was a doctor, Freeman, who's like the American doctor, a neuropathologist who like helped develop this in the early 1940s in the US. So he gave President John F. Kennedy's sister, Rosemary, a lobotomy.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Which I was like, oh dang. And it left her permanently incapacitated.
I've never heard this. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So that's kind of like, oh, what a like terrible way to kind of show off a lobotomy that the president's sister is now incapacitated. So that turned public opinion. Oh, and here's more legitimate statistics. So this Dr. Freeman, in 1971, he published his long-term follow-up of 707 schizophrenics.
Okay.
And he followed up 4 to 30 years after the lobotomy.
Oh, okay.
He reported that despite improvement in the majority, 73% were still hospitalized or at home in a, quote, state of idle dependency. So even though it kind of worked, the vast majority still needed help.
Yeah, and he said it worked for the majority, even though the majority needed help. Like, that's bad math, and I'm bad at math. Like, that's bad.
This is, like, not even girl math. This is just, yeah, bad math.
This is just bad math. Damn, well, at least someone followed up with their patients to see what was good.
Yeah, but
not get what they were looking for. No way. No way.
Yeah. So, like I said before, lobotomies rarely performed. In other countries, it's illegal to do. But in the U.S., they're technically still legal. I don't know if they're still happening. I don't know what doctor would do that, because I feel like that'd be extremely frowned upon.
Frankenstein type of doctor. But
yeah. So basically drugs is what helped get rid of lobotomies.
Yeah, Big Pharma did something good.
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far, but sure, sure. Yeah, so that's lobotomies, because I couldn't dig too deep because then it gets extremely, extremely depressing, as most things in psychology do from the past. But
yeah, yeah. No, I like that. That was great. I love the take on that. I just can't believe I never knew that about, what was the name of John F. Kennedy? Rose?
Rosemary.
Rose Kennedy? Rosemary Kennedy? I've never heard that. I can't believe that it took like a socialite, like a celebrity socialite, you know, type to get it done for it to become a huge no-no.
But isn't that what always happens? Like, I think...
No, it is. It's very much reminiscent of today. Like, it's kind of... I don't want to say funny, but I mean, yeah, it's kind of fucking funny. Like, it's the same shit that would happen today.
Oh, all this crap is happening to us underlings. Like, and then one famous person is like, ooh, this is bad. And they're like, yeah, it's bad. We got to stop it. It's like, cool. Us plebes, we're down here suffering, but thanks.
Plebes. Plebes are little sheeples. Sheep, 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 yeah, sheep.
Pretty much. Pretty much.
Oh, that was fun. Dark, twisty. Got my stomach to turn a little bit. I learned some things I didn't know.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kimberly.
No prob.
So, shall we kick off the next section of this show, which is where we talk about the book that we're reading? And as I mentioned, what do you think? What
would love too soon? To. And shout out to my own therapist who recommended this book.
This is true. We're reading this book because of her therapist.
Yes.
Now, my therapist has recommended plenty of books to me, and she laughs at me because she knows I'm never going to read them. But Kimberly's therapist, on the other hand, I'll read books for her.
Yes. My therapist thanks you. My poor therapist, she's like, if you want to do the work, here's this book, you know, read it, whatever, blah, blah, blah. She's like, highlight it, write in it. I'm like, love it. I'm like, I love to read. And also then I get to buy a book. So you get that like little dopamine high of like, ooh, purchase. And then I get the book. In my mind, I'm just this champion reader. In reality, it took me like 2 weeks to read one chapter. I was like, oh, this is like, I don't enjoy self-help. I'm like, I'm perfect. So why do I need this?
The book literally called How to Do the Work, and you're doing the work by reading the first chapter.
Yeah. Well, let's be honest. Both of us were like, what the frick is this introduction? Like, there's a preface and then an introduction. And I'm just like, oh, dear God.
I enjoyed, what part of it was it that I enjoyed? It was the preface, the Dark Night of the Soul. I actually really liked that. I liked it because it was like from her eyes and her like relating to being at a place of rock bottom. This is a woman who is writing. She is a therapist. She has her own practice, and she felt stuck. That is a term here that her patients have said to her. They feel stuck, and she felt stuck as well. So the whole book is talking, or I'm assuming it's going to talk about how to get out of that stuck place through her method of holistic psychology, which is including the mind, the body, and the brain all in one, instead of keeping the mind and the body separate. What was your initial impressions of it?
Well, I immediately saw why my therapist recommended it to me, because I highlighted things in here. I was like, I have literally said this to my therapist.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, like stuck, or one thing that really resonated was, you know, where you'll like change for a week and you'll be like, I'm doing this. And then it just stops. And I'm like, that's exactly what I do. Like yesterday I was looking online at like cute sports bras and tops. I'm like, I just need the perfect workout outfit to go start doing yoga and live my best life and just turn my entire life around. And obviously that's not going to happen. That's not how that happens. But like in my mind, I still think that way where I'm just like, I just need, you know, the membership, the nice shoes, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so a lot of that resonates. No,
that's real thinking. That's exactly how I am too. It's like, oh, I'm going to do something. Well, let me do all the fun parts of it first, like get all the accessories, get everything that I need, and then never sign up to do it. But exactly. Everything I need to do. And I felt damn good getting all that shit too.
Yeah. Like you're proud of yourself. Like,
yeah.
Like you got it together enough that you literally got everything together.
Yeah, like I got together. I mean, this is embarrassing. I'm going to say this out loud. So I love Pilates, and I got myself a springboard, Pilates board for my wall around Christmas time. I treated myself and I got everything for it. I got, you know, the mat, all the springs, the outfit, just the whole damn attitude. The book that teaches you how to do the workouts, and I have not done it once.
I mean, it's only March.
It's only March, and I've had it since December, and now I'm in this guilt shame spiral of there's this beautiful board on my wall and I don't practice with it, and I just, oh my God, it's just terrible. That's where I feel stuck. It's part of the stuck. Like it's part of the, I can only get so far and then I get stuck.
Yeah. That's where like I had this come to Jesus with my therapist, where I was like, I keep coming to you. I keep complaining about stuff. And like, yes, you help. How can I help myself? Because my therapist always says, she's like, you should be doing more work than I'm doing for you. Like if I'm doing more work for you, then this isn't like a productive type relationship, because she shouldn't be the one fixing me. Like I have to do the work myself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I was like, I am not doing the work. I show up to therapy, you know, I take my medication and I try and work through my anxiety attacks. Okay, what else am I doing? Like, and that's mm-hmm. why I read this book or started reading this book, because I was like, yeah, please give something to me that I can like help myself. So
did you do the at the end of chapter one? And then I have a question. I like this really cool thing that she wrote in here I want to ask you about. But at the end of chapter one, did you fill out the little work?
No, because I read through like three questions and I was like, okay, yeah, I am. Like,
yeah, because all mine are yes, 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 yes. If you answered yes to one or more of these questions, you are likely feeling stuck. So it's like, yes.
I like skimmed it, and then once I saw that if you've answered yes to one or more, I was like, yeah, I don't even need to write this down.
Yeah.
Okay. But what so was your was this, thing?
Yeah, I highlighted it. It's a pretty long quote, but I figured because of our ages, clocking your age right now, that I wonder if you feel this way too. Okay. Here's a little excerpt. I had recently celebrated my 30th birthday and thought to myself, is this it? Even though I had already checked off so many of the boxes that I dreamed of since I was a child, living in a city of my choosing, running my own private therapy practice, finding a loving partner, I still felt like there was something essential in my being that was lost or missing or had never been there in the first place.
Yeah, when I read that at first, I was like, subtle brag much? I was like, oh, you're 30 with a private practice. I'm like, hey, at least you have a private practice. You might be mentally unwell, but at least you're freaking crushing it professionally.
I know. That shit gave me comfort, because I was like, oh, man, you could feel that way too when you're treating people for this and you're that young. Like,
yeah.
But I don't know. That really resonated with me, because I was like, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it resonated with me too, because it's almost like we're just constantly looking for other people who feel like us, you know, like you just want somebody else to acknowledge, no, what you're feeling is justified, like valid.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like for the longest time, this is where I hate social media, but I'm on social media all the time. But you think everybody else is crushing life and like getting married, having kids, buying a house. And yeah, we all know, like everybody, you know, nobody lives that perfect life. But when you keep seeing it and you keep having to deal with the dark moments in your own life, it's like, am I alone in this? Does anybody else feel that way? So it was nice to feel like validated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those picture perfect lifestyles on Instagram and Facebook. And you're just sitting there wondering, be like, nah, you have four kids. Show me it. Show me the real pain. Like, please, like, stop making it look like that. But obviously, it's, you know, social media is what it is. But yeah, I felt very validated in that too. Especially, I'm going to be 35. And it's just like, is this what it is?
Yeah.
Because it's just the best question. It's like, is this it now? Is this it? Like, what now? What?
Yeah. Which is like, it's so, for me right now, it's like depressing. Like, oh my gosh, is this all there is? But I'm trying to like change my mind to be like, no, like there's so much more to discover, or, you know, I get to grow into so many other versions of myself, but yeah, it's hard to think that way when you're in this just like dark place where your like mind lies to you. And it's like, everybody else is ahead. You're so far behind.
Why are our minds like that? They're such dicks.
Yeah. Well, there's this whole thing. I don't know where I read this, but it was like, don't believe your thoughts. Like your thoughts lie to you. And that's why I think, is it CBT where cognitive behavioral therapy?
Yeah. Yeah.
Where like you look at the facts and it's just crazy the amount of crap that we like believe that we tell ourselves. Like it's like, oh, I'm a failure to my family because I got a B on a test. And it's like, okay,
7 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And it's like, okay, what facts back that up? Absolutely nothing.
Absolutely nothing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so true.
It's upsetting, but mental health is upsetting. It's depressing, if you will.
It's driven by anxiety.
Yeah. Honestly, mental health jokes just make me so just make me laugh because normally they're so funny and so dark. Gosh.
Yeah, it is. It's like, I love it when I love comedy. So I watch all sorts of different comedians and I love when they do like depression jokes or anything like bipolar. It makes me feel validated. It makes me feel validated. Like, oh, there's my people. Like that person up there gets it. Like that's one of my people.
Yeah.
Cause like you said earlier, I think we're all just trying to find our people and that can be incredibly overwhelming and anxiety driven and just depressing sometimes. Cause you don't think that those people exist because they're presenting themselves differently, the internet or various platforms in your life. La di da di da da.
Yeah. I can't imagine growing up in this society. Yes, like you said, like mental health is more talked about, is more, you know, recognized as, you know, a real illness, all this stuff. But like after COVID, you know, and all they had was social media and it can socially stunt a generation. Oh gosh. I can't imagine being a part of that generation.
No, the social pressure starts so early. Social pressure started for me early too. That was Victoria's Secret's fault. And those catalogs only came like, you know, ever so often. It wasn't like it was like bombarded in my face, like on social media or anything. Yeah. Literally, like I got to say, Victoria's Secret had the biggest effect like on my body image and everything growing up.
I think America's Next Top Model, like what people are realizing now.
Oh my gosh. oh my gosh, America's Next Top Model, what they're realizing. Oh my God. What is it? What is the line? What is the line? We all believed in you. Oh, man.
Oh.
What is it?
Yeah.
What is it? You could do this. We.
What was it?
I can't remember.
We were rooting for you. We were all rooting for you.
Yeah. Yes. Oh my gosh. She was a tyrant. She was such a tyrant. That was actually another show too. Like I remember watching a girl eat, like they were abroad in like France doing something and she was like eating in a room and all the other girls were judging her for eating because how she's getting a little bit of a belly. And I was like, are y'all kidding me? Like,
yeah.
I mean, that's not what I was thinking then in that moment. In that moment, I was thinking, should I eat in private too? So people don't judge me.
Yeah.
Like, this is the lessons I'm
so
learning.
Terrible. But it's like so true because you're like, I was a child watching that, but like, who knew that that would be so like messed up to like who we are as women now? Like, I don't know. I just wouldn't know. Like, we're the plus size. Like, technically, I believe I'm a plus size because I think
I'm a plus size model at this point when they would come in. Like, I was like,
yeah, like what? And I mean, we're just talking about the mental health things, but that one where she had people switch races, that did not age well.
I know. I need to go back and start watching this again. We could have a whole little segment on this about how unhealthy America's Next Top Model is, how it shaped women and men in like today's society, how it shaped everybody on all the spectrum on today's society, because that was a lot. That was a lot.
It was. It was. Like, ooh. Ma'am, is there any good things about mental health, like, that have, I mean, besides the prevalence of, like, better drugs and I guess kind of better treatment, it's still like kind of a very depressing field of we don't know.
It hasn't come very far. We're lucky like where we live that it's like more widely accepted now, but it wasn't like that 10 years ago. Like 10 years ago, I wasn't running around like feeling, I wouldn't feel comfortable telling people like about any of my diagnoses or how long I'd been in therapy or any of the medications I'm on. Like that was all for me. But nowadays it's like, hey, what are you on? Oh, me too. Like it's basically like trading Pokemon cards or something, except don't trade your medicines. You don't do that. It's
okay,
just
that's
more
illegal.
Like, yes, that's not what I'm saying. So, but it's just, today it's different in that sense in that we have more access and we're being told to actually seek out help for the first time in ever in history. Like all these commercials and stuff that we see, like for like those text apps where you could have therapy, anything, like it's literally asking people to reach out and go to therapy, which is something that I don't think America's ever seen.
Yeah. I still think we have very far to go though. I mean, just because I think of how some therapy, like normal talking therapy, isn't always covered by health insurance or isn't seen as a valid medical thing. You know,
that's
like
where we have, yeah.
And that's where it becomes hard. It's once again that thing where it's like, if you can't see it, you don't think it exists. It's like, okay, well, I'd love you to deal with depression and try and get out of bed some days. Like, please,
like I can't, because big pharma and big medicine companies are not allowing, you know, big medical insurance. They're not allowing me to. This privately owned corporations.
Yeah. Gosh, there's so much money.
That needs to change. That needs to change and fall apart because we are not a money-making scheme. We're human beings.
Yeah, unfortunately. But we're also just plebes in the whole scheme of things, which is
plebe. So anything else about this book? Because it got us talking, that's for sure.
It did. I mean, the first chapter, let me see if I highlighted anything, because I'm trying to highlight, because quite honestly, if my therapist sees this, I want her to know I read it. I'm like, okay, let me do this work. Like, I'm doing this for my therapist, kind of, but I'm doing it, you know, like why I do it. I do want to get better, but it's also like, I kind of want my therapist to be proud of me.
She will be proud of you. She'll be proud of you because you're learning how to do the work with Dr. Nicole Lapera.
Yeah. Have you seen those like memes or whatever where it's like, you just want your therapist to be like, you win.
I have nothing else to fix. Like, you're great. You don't know exactly what's happening. And it's like, yeah.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah. Or something where it's like, oh, you were so funny. Like, just your therapist just like reaffirming stuff for you. And it's like, that's never going to happen. And if it does, like, get a new therapist, because that is probably not right. But okay, let's see. Let's see. Chapter one. Okay. So I have these things highlighted where she has the basic tenets of holistic psychology.
Take us through those. Let's do that one. That'll be one that we can end on. Or okay. If you have something before that.
So there's four. First one, healing is a daily event. And you have to like go inward to heal, which sucks. She's like, it's not like you go somewhere to heal, where I think like, oh, therapy. I go to therapy to heal. And it's like, no. You got to look at yourself. And that's where it's like, oh, crap. Like, I actually have to take ownership for this. Please no.
Yep.
Like,
please no.
I just want to put this on generational trauma, you know? Like, okay, it's my parents.
You would.
The second thing. So it says, harness the power of choice because choice enables healing. So we can control, like, what we choose to do. Actions, thoughts, all those things.
Yeah, things that we think are beyond our control sometimes aren't. So we could take the reins.
Yeah, but that just feels... I told my therapist this because I had a whole therapy session just kind of digging into this. Not this specifically, but just like where I was and wanting to do the work. And it's almost suffocating where it's like, holy crap, I choose this. Because she was saying, I take the victim role a lot in my mental health. And I love my therapist. She never says anything accusatory, but like, you know, like shameful or anything. She just makes comments and, you know, whatever. But she was saying that I'm a victim. The way I speak, I sound like a victim because I'm like, my anxiety is happening to me. You know, depression mm-hmm. is happening to me. And in reality, she's like, no, like, anxiety is part of who you are, but it's something that can change. Like, I don't own my anxiety and depression. I see it as just my brain is wired differently and that cannot change. And she's like, in some cases, yeah, like not the wiring of your brain, but like, you know, the chemicals are imbalanced. But she's mm-hmm. like, for a lot of people, this is just, you know, changing thoughts, changing actions, actually putting in the work. And you don't have to live this way forever. And that sucked so bad to hear, to be like, wait, I'm doing this to myself. And that's not fully the case because, you know, life circumstances and stuff. But it's like, you have the power to change this. And mm-hmm. that sucks to hear. So I'm not sure if you had that awakening, Kelly, where you're like, oh, wait, I have the power and the control of my life. You're like, I'm ignoring that fact.
I have, mine's more behavioral. So mine's just trying to learn patterns and see them before they start happening. So therefore I can control them. So it's hard.
But the fact that you even are aware of the patterns, I mean, I'm not even sure I'm that far into this. I'm just trying to acknowledge, what am I doing? You know, and trying to change things for the healthier. I'm not even that far to be like, well, this is a pattern.
I've been in therapy since I was 18.
I mean, okay, I haven't been since 18, but I've been in therapy quite often too. It's funny because I swear my friends get like... not drive-by therapy, but like osmosis therapy, because it's like my therapist talks to me and then I talk to my friends and my friends are like, oh my gosh, this is such great advice. I'm like, thank you, because it costs literally thousands of dollars and hours of my life. So
I've done the same thing. My therapist says some dank ass shit sometimes and I'm just like, I'm taking that into life and I'm gonna say that, and that's gonna be my journey. And I've gotten the same types of things. It's like, oh wow, you're so self-aware, like, what is that? I'm like, yeah, I should be for all that money, I should be self-aware, I should know what's going on, and I should be able to tell you what's what.
Yeah, like we can identify our problems. It's just fixing them that's the hard part.
Is fixing the right word? See, a therapist right now would be like, is fixing the right word to use?
I don't know.
I don't think it is. I think it's more like a shifting a behavior, changing a behavior, not fixing it. Because fixing implies that something's wrong with it.
Yeah, I don't like saying like I have a broken brain, or when people say like I'm broken, I'm like, I don't like that.
I learned a good phrase because I don't like saying that kind of stuff either. I don't like saying like, oh, my brain's not normal or this and that. So I asked my therapist, like, what can I say? And she could, instead of saying like, I don't want to say I'm not a normal person or she said, say you're atypical. So there's typical people and I'm just atypical. And I was like, I kind of like saying I'm atypical, a little different. It's a little better than saying normal, because there really kind of is no such thing as normal. Everybody's got their own normal. It's kind of like a blanket word.
I don't even know what I say.
You say it's happening to me. I'm a victim. That's why you're reading the book.
Yeah, really. Yeah, I suffer through this. I don't even know. But super random side story. So I was talking to my therapist and I said something. I don't know what this was in reference to. I think obviously mental illness, but I was like, you know, sometimes just going into my mental illness or something is like putting on sweatpants where you're just comfortable and like, this is it, like, you know, whatever. And that wasn't the exact phraseology of it, but she's like, oh, I like that. Like, I think I'm going to use that. And honestly, that probably made my life. I was like, I'm helping people.
That's my therapist. That's such a good point. It does feel like that. It feels like cuddling up with an old friend. That's how I always thought of it. It just feels like a safe place to be.
It does. That's something else where you want the comfort, and you're at the very least, even if it gives you anxiety, you know what's going to happen. You're like, oh, I have a panic attack. Yeah, this sucks. I hate it. You know, it's a lot to go through, but I know it. Mm-hmm. The unknown is scary. Like, what if this gets worse? What if I find out, like, I'm a terrible human being? You know, like, it's like, I'd rather live in this safe place where, okay, at least I know my mental illness.
And you know what to expect. And you've seen the pattern before. So you know where it's going to go, and it's comfort zone.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. We're all... Oh, I'm sure most of us are guilty of that.
Yeah, which is why we're reading this book yet again. Okay, let me finish these last two. So it was Healing is a Daily Event, Harness the Power of Choice. Third one, The Practice of Making Consistent Small Daily Choices, Empower the Change. So basically not making just one huge change, but like small incremental things. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, just taking responsibility for mental wellness. So like being empowered by the ability to make yourself better. So those were kind of the things that I highlighted, because I'm like, oh, okay, all those things suck to hear, but they're important to know. So
yeah.
But yeah, that was chapter one.
Yeah, I like it so far. I
think chapter one.
Chapter one. What did we say we're going to do next week? We're going to come in with chapter two and three.
Yes. Chapter two and three.
And again, the book that we're reading is How to Do the Work by Dr. Nicole LaPera, the holistic psychologist.
You can also find her on social media. I follow her on Instagram. She has some good posts.
Cool. Yeah. Oh, yeah. When I told my therapist I was reading this book, she got all hype about it, because she was like, ah. I was like, oh, okay. So it's a good book.
You're like, I have your approval. Good.
Thank you. Because Kimberly's therapist gave her approval and one acknowledgement as well. Please and thank you always.
We're terrible. We're like literally reading this book from like, because we want to feel validation. And then we're also like, oh, cool. Other people are doing it. Let's do it.
And that's who we are today. That's
upsetting, Kelly. That is upsetting.
It's okay. We can make behavioral changes all in due time. We'll make them over the course of this podcast.
Yeah. Or things will just get darker.
Either way, I hope people join us along the journey.
Yeah. Yeah, the journey to who freaking knows. Hopefully not rock bottom.
No, but if you are at rock bottom, there's only one way up, according to Dr. Nicola Perra.
Well, there are shovels. You can dig deeper, but...
And that's my friend Kimberly.
Yeah.
Oops.
Well, all right.
This has been fun. This has been real. This hasn't been real fun.
I know.
Have you heard that before?
I have heard that before, yes. I have heard that before. I was like, no, don't keep going with that. No, she's going to go all the way.
No, I went all the way.
She went all the way. She went all the way. So please like and rate and subscribe to our podcast. I am not OKK. We'll be releasing weekly episodes. My name again is Kelly, and I've had a blast with y'all today.
And I'm Kimberly, and I'm still at a 4.
She's still at a 4. Oh, have a good one. And remember to try and be okay.
Okay?